Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record program number 1138, BioPsyOp Apocalypse Now, Part 10, Bad Medicine. This is being recorded on July the 8th of 2020. Well, this program will be once again focusing on remdesivir. That is a drug that is being developed or has been developed by Gilead Sciences, described in an article that we will access as the best connected biotechnology company around or in the world. And that medicine, remdesivir, R-E-M-D-E-S-I-V-I-R, was originally developed to fight Ebola. As we have seen and as we will review once again, it basically fizzled. It did not do well when tested on Ebola or against Ebola. However, Gilead Sciences has said that they intend to persevere with remdesivir, an antiviral, to be used as a broad spectrum antiviral. It has been approved for use against COVID-19 or against SARS-CoV-2. That is the virus that causes COVID-19. And it has enjoyed some modest success. It has reduced the period of hospitalization required from 15 to 11 days, but did not affect mortality. And as we looked at in For the Record programs, numbers 1132 and again in 1134, the NIAID study was changed and precipitously at that, and it was changed in such a way as to benefit the results that were shown by remdesivir. This was in the immediate run-up to April 29th of this year. On April 29th, there was an enormous spike in the markets. The equities markets soared. The stock markets soared on news of remdesivir. That same day, April 29th, a fellow who was a lobbyist for a guy named Joe Grogan, the lobbyist for Gilead Sciences, who had graduated to the Trump administration, then resigned. I guess one might infer that the mission was accomplished. In this program, we're going to take a look at some disturbing aspects not only of what remdesivir has been involved with, but we are going to return once again to the shutdown in early August of 2019 of the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases at Fort Detrick. It turns out, and there are several articles that we will be dealing with, I'm going to present some of the most important aspects of these articles, and then we will go ahead and examine some excerpts at length and in detail. For openers, the information about exactly why the CDC closed down the USAMRIID has been basically kept under locks for, as one might suspect, national security concerns. Basically, there has been an absence of transparency. It turns out that a number of the violations involved with the USAMRIID involved various transgressions in which non-human primates, as they were described, that were infected with a select agent, as it was described, were basically involved with some botched procedures. I would note a couple of things. The identity of the select agent was not disclosed. It was redacted, the reason being that, as it was stated, to do so, to release the identity of the agent, would endanger public health or safety. It would appear that what would endanger public safety would be the actual escape of such a select agent, unquote, although perhaps the location might enable someone who was going to, you know, let's say a miscreant of some kind who was going to try and secure that agent in order to perform wrongdoing. Well, that might. But disclosing the identity or the type of select agent is not going to affect public health or safety. What will affect public health or safety is if that select agent got out and began infecting people and causing pathology. So, again, exactly what the select agent is remains to be seen. As we will see, the tests of remdesivir for Ebola, and those did not go well when tested in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where there was an enormous Ebola outbreak. In fact, remdesivir, along with another drug, were disqualified because they did such a poor job. In March of last year, there was an operation undertaken, or an experiment or a test undertaken at the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases at Fort Detrick, in which Gilead Sciences remdesivir was being tested on rhesus macaque monkeys who were infected with Ebola. This was what is described as an animal trial, and that is a vehicle in which or through which a treatment or potential treatment can be approved by the FDA if, for one reason or another, trials on human beings did not, or were not feasible or not, readily available enough. Now, whether the many violations of the involving these non-human primates infected with a select agent, whether those were the rhesus macaque monkeys that were infected with Ebola in order to test remdesivir remains a topic of speculation, but it certainly seems possible. I would say probable under the circumstances. Another question, and we will briefly review an excerpt from a very important article by Whitney Webb from the Last American Vagabond blog that we used in For the Records 1119 and 1120. The Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency of the Pentagon had been extensively researching bat-borne coronaviruses and viruses of the type of which SARS-CoV-2 belongs were actually being tested at the Wuhan Institute of Virology under a joint U.S. and Chinese program in which the U.S. component was funded by institutions that have fronted for U.S. intelligence in the past, both the NIH and the U.S. Agency for International Development. Now, whether or not SARS-CoV-2 had been developed and was being tested at USAMRIID is a matter of speculation. If, again, with a capital I and a capital F, SARS-CoV-2 had been developed and was being tested, due to the relative methodological laxness, which we will observe, it certainly seems possible that it would have gotten out. I, for one, do not think there was anything accidental about COVID, the development of COVID-19. I've spoken about that in the past, and we will come back to that in this and future programs. However, one of the things to note, and this is covered in an article in which the reforms in procedures that are followed at USAMRIID involved better training and monitoring of the personnel involved at the institution. Most of those personnel are private contractors. This certainly makes it possible that any one of a number of potential malefactors, an underground Reich operative working for a big pharma company, Nazi agents who have infiltrated the military, and some certainly have, CIA, some combination thereof, some of the Project Coast milieu that we discussed in, for the record, 1128, that we will come back to briefly here. They might have been involved, certainly with private contractors comprising the bulk of operational personnel at the USAMRIIB. Basically, you could pretty much roll the dice as to who might have had access to what and who might have been involved with ferreting out, and there is a pun there, some deadly pathogen, say SARS-CoV-2 or something like that, and then helping to precipitate the COVID-19 epidemic. Again, the outbreak of COVID-19 takes place in the context of a number of overlapping overt and covert operations against China as part of the full court press anti-China effort that I have spoken about in many programs, including a number of shows preceding the outbreak of COVID-19 by some months. Now, the first of the stories that we are going to deal with in terms of USAMRIIB, this is from ABC7 WJLA television station from January 22nd of 2020. The story is by Diana Diganji, D-I-G-A-N-G-I, I may be mispronouncing that. The article is titled, Army Germ Lab Shut Down by CDC in 2019 Had Several Serious, Unquote, Protocol Violations That Year. And the article reads in part, in 2019, an Army laboratory at Fort Detrick that studies deadly infectious material like Ebola and smallpox was shut down for a period of time after a CDC inspection, with many projects being temporarily halted. The lab itself reported that the shutdown order was due to ongoing infrastructure issues with wastewater decontamination, and the CDC declined to provide the reason for the shutdown due to national security concerns. This last part of the sentence again. The CDC declined to provide the reason for the shutdown due to national security concerns. Skipping down. Earlier that year, that's 2019, the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute had announced an experiment at the Fort Detrick Laboratory that would involve infecting rhesus macaque monkeys with active Ebola virus to test a cure they were developing. That is remdesivir, produced by Gilead Sciences. More about that later. Several of the laboratory violations the CDC noted in 2019 concerned non-human primates, unquote, infected with a select agent, unquote, the identity of which is unknown. It was redacted in all received documents because disclosing the identity and location of the agent would endanger public health or safety, the agency says. In addition to Ebola, the lab works with other deadly agents like anthrax and smallpox. Select agents are defined by the CDC as, quote, biological agents and toxins that have been determined to have the potential to pose a severe threat to public health and safety, to animal and plant health, or to animal or plant products, unquote. So again, two of the very important aspects of this story so far. Note again that, quote, the CDC declined to provide the reason for the shutdown due to national security concerns. And again, several of the laboratory violations the CDC noted in 2019 concerned non-human primates infected with a select agent, the identity of which is unknown. It was redacted in all received documents because disclosing the identity and location of the agent would endanger public health or safety. Well, again, what would appear to endanger public health or safety would be the actual release of one of these deadly pathogens into the public, where they could it could begin infecting people and making them sick. The lack of transparency here is of some concern. One wonders, was it in fact Ebola? Is it possible it was SARS-CoV-2 if such a thing had been developed? We will not know, and the lack of transparency is, I guess, perhaps predictable, but it is nonetheless disturbing, and we will, of course, never know. Still more from this ABC 7 WJLA story from January 22nd of this year. The CDC reported that an individual partially entered a room multiple times without the required respiratory protection while other people in that room were performing procedures with a non-human primate on a necropsy table, or a necropsy table. Again, they were dissecting the dead corpse of a non-human primate, or the corpse of a non-human primate. Was that one of the rhesus macaque monkeys infected with Ebola, the test remdesivir? We don't know. Skipping down. On the second observation of violation, quote, the CDC reported that the lab did not ensure the employee training was proper, or that employee training was properly verified when it came to toxins and select agents. Quote, these failures were recognized through video reviews of laboratorians working in BSL-3 and ABSL-3 labs, the report said. These indicate the lab's means used to verify personnel understood the training had not been effective, leading to increased risk of occupational exposures. If in fact some of the, I would add parenthetically, the Ebola, I believe, can only be experimented with in a BSL-4 lab, the most secure, since it is such a deadly agent. One wonders if perhaps it was being experimented in the BSL-3. Continuing, the CDC went on to specify that a laboratorian who was not wearing appropriate respiratory protection was seen multiple times, quote, partially entering, unquote, a room where non-human primates that were infected with, and then the was redacted, were, quote, housed in open caging, unquote. They also observed a laboratorian disposing of waste in a biohazardous waste bin without gloves on. So again, the redacted select agent and non-human primates comes into play once again. Now again, were these the rhesus macaque monkeys infected with Ebola to test remdesivir for Gilead Sciences? We don't know. We do know, however, that that was going on at the USAMRIID. And the third observation. In this violation observation, the CDC went into more detail on the incident of the worker not wearing gloves while disposing of biohazardous waste, writing that, quote, biosafety and containment procedures must be sufficient to contain the select agent or toxin. Again, that being someone who was one of the agents that was being tested on the non-human primates. So again, many of these violations involved non-human primates. And were they the ones being infected by the, infected with Ebola so that they could test remdesivir for the Gilead Sciences? We do not know. And the next violation. The violation specifically observed involved, quote, entity personnel propping open, quote, a door while removing, quote, large amounts of biohazardous waste, unquote, from an adjacent room, increasing the risk of contaminated air from the room escaping and being drawn into the, then it's redacted, where the people working typically do not wear respiratory protection, unquote. Again, it is not said what biohazardous waste was. Was this waste matter from the rhesus macaque monkeys infected with Ebola? We do not know. We do know, though, that that work was going on at the USAMRIID at that time. More here. The CDC reported that the laboratory failed to safeguard against unauthorized access to select agents. They wrote that personal protective equipment worn while contaminating something contaminated by a select agent had been stored in open biohazard bags in an area of the facility that the CDC has redacted for security reasons. And they are quoted, quote, by storing regulated waste in this area, the entity did not limit access to those with access approval, they wrote. And skipping down again, and it's funny because this observation, this violation, said that this is a moderate security level violation. It looks, to my untrained eyes, more than moderate. The CDC reports that someone at the lab did not maintain an accurate or current inventory for a toxin. Again, what toxin, we don't know. Again, as we will see, the bulk of the personnel employed at the USAMRIID are private contractors, and that opens up the possibility of any one of a number of potential miscreants being involved. If someone did not maintain, and this is an exact quote here, did not maintain an accurate or current inventory for a toxin, that certainly opens up the possibility or suggests the potential for someone ferreting out one of those, quote, select agents, unquote. Now, of the initiation in March of 2019, again, in early August of 2019, the CDC temporarily closed down the USAMRIID for some of those violations. And again, note that the nature of the select agent and the reasons for the CDC closing it down were classified for national security reasons. And the lack of transparency here is disturbing. But note again that one of the things that was going on, noting again the number of violations involving non-human primates infected with a select agent, one of the things going on at the Institute at this time was the testing of remdesivir produced by Gilead Sciences by infecting rhesus macaque monkeys with Ebola. And this article is by Karee van der Linden, Karee Vander, last name Linden, from March 28th of 2019. And this is titled, USAMRIID Research Provides Regulatory Framework for Developing Ebola Virus Therapeutic Under FDA Animal Rule. And this reads in part as follows. The U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases, or USAMRIID, today announced that for the first time, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, has provided formal regulatory agreement for use of an animal model to support development of a drug candidate, remdesivir, for treating deadly Ebola virus infections. This agreement was made possible through a 2018 Natural History Study, or NHS, of Ebola virus conducted by USAMRIID in close collaboration with Gilead Sciences Incorporated, the sponsor of Remdesivir development. Skipping down. Specifically, the FDA agreed that the rhesus macaque infected by intramuscular or IM injection is a relevant and adequately characterized model of Ebola virus disease to support filing under the FDA animal rule. In addition, the agency agreed that the rhesus IM EBOV disease model is sufficient as a single animal model for therapeutic product development. Sponsors must demonstrate efficacy before a medical product can be approved by the FDA. However, for certain products, when obtaining efficacy data from human patients is not ethical or feasible, the FDA may grant approval under the animal rule. Such approval will be based on efficacy data from well-controlled studies in adequately characterized animal models when the results of those studies establish that the drug candidate is reasonably likely to produce clinical benefits in humans. The sponsor must still demonstrate the product's safety in humans. And skipping down, the study design and data quality posture USAMRIID adopted for the Ebola virus MHS sets a precedent that has the potential to be useful for medical countermeasure development efforts targeting other similar human pathogens such as Marburg or Sudan viruses. And note, and again, we'll come back to this, note that even though the Ebola trials of remdesivir fizzled, Gilead Sciences remained optimistic or committed, as they put it, to maintaining development of remdesivir as a broad-spectrum antiviral. They are now going to be making an enormous amount of money as a result of remdesivir being approved for treatment of COVID-19, as we looked at in For the Record 1132 and reviewed again in 1134. There was some fairly obvious official gaming of the table, so to speak, in behalf or in favor of remdesivir. The NIAID tests of remdesivir were skewed badly. They were attenuated and weighted in such a way as to very precipitously report very positive news on the remdesivir development. That drove the market surge on April 29th of this year, the same day that Joe Grogan, a former Gilead Sciences lobbyist, resigned from the Trump administration. And note, as we looked at again in For the Record 1132 and 1134, the, quote, scientists to stop COVID-19, unquote, involving scientists like Peter Thiel and former junk bond king Michael Milken, were committed to getting remdesivir approved as an early stage treatment for COVID-19, and that FDA and Veterans Administration procedures were being duly attenuated in order to meet that development. Now, we are going to be taking a look at how remdesivir failed when being tested in an enormous Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Now, the Congo, as we have looked at in many programs, most recently in our landmark series of 25 interviews with Jim Diagemio, the author of Destiny Betrayed, about the Jim Garrison investigation into the JFK assassination. We looked at assassination of Lumumba and the Western covert operation, mostly CIA, though no, by no means exclusive, which turned the resource-rich Congo into basically a sort of a corporate colonial power. In for the records, 317, 323, and, or rather, 317, and, I believe it was 323, in any event, those programs, and for the record, 1128. We took a look at Project Coast, Dr. Larry Ford, and personnel like Stephen Hatfill, although never convicted, he was a suspect in the anthrax attacks in 2001. And we took a look at overlaps between some of the CIA and Fort Detrick support for Project Coast and the post apartheid regime survival and continued operation of some of these individuals as part of Deorganisation, a post-war Brüggerbund style apartheid underground, altogether lethal and deadly, and again, with having a past of operational links with elements of CIA and Fort Detrick. One of the things we looked at in For the Record 1128, as well as For the Record 317, and I believe it was 323, and those were some of the apparent uses and suspicions that, in fact, Ebola had been part of the Project Coast and apartheid-era biological warfare campaigns in the former colony of Rhodesia, now Zimbabwe, as well as South Africa. From the article The Medicine Man by Larry Humes from LA Magazine from July of 2001, speaking of Dr. Larry Ford. Ford told the Rileys and others his subsequent work for the military and the CIA included research on biological and chemical weapons, consulting on Iraqi capabilities during the Gulf War, and sneaking into epidemic hot zones in Africa to gather samples of such killer organisms as the Ebola and Marburg viruses. By the way, Marburg and Ebola, as well as the Sudan virus, are among the viruses that Gilead scientists felt that remdesivir might prove useful in combating. It fizzled against Ebola. However, they were committed, as I said before, to maintaining remdesivir as a broad-spectrum antiviral, and it has now been approved as a result of an apparently skewed or weighted testing and regulatory system. It has now emerged as a very lucrative treatment for COVID-19. Now, the Zimbabwean Health Minister, Dr. Stamps, and this from the book Plague Wars by Jeffrey Goldberg and Tom Mangold, he had some suspicions about outbreaks of Ebola in Zimbabwe, formerly Rhodesia, and he discusses that here. I have my suspicions about Ebola, too. It developed along the line of the Zambezi River, and I suspect that this may have been an experiment to see if a new virus could be established to infect people. We looked on the serological evidence on strange cases, including a 15-year-old child which occurred in 1980. Nothing really made epidemiological sense. Do I have evidence? Only circumstantial. In fact, the Rhodesian security forces were more expert than the Nazis at covering up evidence. And note that Stephen Hatfield had worked on Project Coast in South Africa and also was apparently a member of the SEALS scouts in the for the apartheid regime in what had been Rhodesia. Note that as we looked at in For the Record 642 and came back to in 1128, Stephen Hatfield was a member of White Afrikaner Resistance. And coming back to a Project Coast veteran who disclosed information under the codename GERT, capital G-E-R-T, about the Zairean outbreak, quote, and Project Coast, quote, look, I know what one of the very, very, very secret specialized units had. We had to test it. And that was viral capsules that were specifically related to Congo fever and the hemorrhagic fevers. Ebola? Yes, unquote. So Gert is beginning to corroborate Dr. Stamp's suspicions in Harare that Ebola and Marburg, although indigenous, were also artificially seeded into southern Africa. Bassinet's Wouterbassin, the head of Project Coast, the apartheid regime's deadly biological warfare program. Bassin, says Gert, was involved in all this. When the last terrible Ebola outbreak occurred in Kikwit, Zaire, as late as 1995, Gert claims that Bassin was there unofficially. 20 years earlier, when the village of Yambuku in northern Zaire witnessed one of the first major Ebola outbreaks, two South African scientists were there, allegedly working hand in glove with U.S. military personnel from Fort Detrick, as we will see. There was testing on a huge Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and this afforded opportunity to test a number of Ebola drugs, and it was feared initially that the amount of testing required might need to be, might mandate that the tests be stretch over a period involving several Ebola outbreaks, but the outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo was so huge, it permitted sufficient testing. One of the questions I think should be asked is the possibility of whether or not that, in fact, that outbreak was deliberately seeded, given the overlap between biological warfare personnel and the history of elements of them collaborating with the Rhodesian and apartheid South African biological warfare programs. I don't think that is an unreasonable question to ask. Was that huge outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo simply happenstance, or might it have been deliberately seeded to, among other things, help develop very lucrative Ebola treatments? Now, some changes were made in the USAMRIID, and the Talley, T-A-L-L-E-Y, described here is Brigadier General Mike Talley, who is the CO at the facility at Fort Detrick. One of the stunning things here is that most of the personnel there were private contractors, and they weren't apparently very rigorously tested. This is from WDBM from October 9th of 2019. It's by Jasmine Pelaez, P-E-L-A-E-Z. Army leadership shares details on changes made to reopen Fort Detrick labs. And quoting here, "We've had to make adjustments. We can't keep doing things the way we've always done it," unquote, explained Commanding General for Medical Research and Development Command at Fort Detrick, Brigadier General Mike Talley. Skipping down. A majority, quoting General Talley, "a majority of our laboratory workers are contractors putting teeth in the contracts to ensure that they're following the shalls, wills, and musts are things we've done in the interim," unquote, said Talley. "Training is a main focus moving forward," Talley explains, "that personnel working within the higher level labs will go through certification." Quote, "Only those personnel who have been certified through the training are going to be allowed to go back into the laboratories, and there is a solid sustainment plan to keep their skills up. We haven't done this before," Talley explained. And again, with most of the laboratory workers being contractors, the relative lack of rigorous training and standardization here is disturbing. If ever there were a set of circumstances in which rigorous application of military discipline and OPSEC, operational security, were mandatory here, well, this would certainly appear to be it. I mean, they're not handling jelly donuts here. They're handling deadly pathogens. And in addition to this simply being disturbing in and of itself, the number of potential miscreants, as I mentioned earlier in the program, any one of a number of people could have gotten in there and gotten God knows what, whether in fact, for the sake of argument, SARS-CoV-2 is being developed there, Ebola, you name it. And again, with regard to biological warfare, it only takes a very small number of personnel to wreak havoc, and with the relative lack of security here, and with private contractors being involved with the USAMRIIB, it makes the potential number of miscreants, and bearing in mind again that only a small number of people would have been required to wreak havoc, it is disturbing and certainly provides us with information on a potential breach in USAMRIIB security. Again, could the CIA personnel, Nazi personnel, who knows, Project Coast, white supremacist link personnel, anybody could have done that. Now, returning to the subject of remdesivir and Ebola, remdesivir was tried in human beings in trials that were conducted in, among other places, the Democratic Republic of Congo. And remdesivir failed badly. From Stat News of August 12th of 2019, this by Helen Branswell, B-R-A-N-S-W-E-L-L. For the first time, clinical trial results show Ebola drugs improve survival rates, unquote. And remdesivir was not among them. Two other therapies used in the clinical trial performed less well and will be discontinued. Skipping down here. Two other therapies used in the clinical trial performed less well and will be discontinued. The therapies that have improved survival rates are REGNEB3, a cocktail of three monoclonal Ebola antibodies made by Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, and MAB114, a single monoclonal antibody developed by the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, part of the National Institutes of Health. The clinical trial will continue comparing these two drugs in Ebola treatment centers in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And those were the two selected, two others. The antiviral drug remdesivir, made by Gilead, underperformed ZMAP. The board decided that trial should be revamped to test REGNEB3 and MAB114 against each other. Remdesivir and ZMAP have been dropped from the trial. And skipping down again. A statement from Gilead said the company remains committed to studying remdesivir as a possible treatment for Ebola, and note this, and other emerging viral diseases. Again, a statement from Gilead said the company remains committed to studying remdesivir as a possible treatment for Ebola and other emerging viral diseases. And as we have seen, the emerging viral disease COVID-19 produced by SARS-CoV-2 is one of the diseases that now remdesivir has made a lot of money for Gilead Sciences, because remdesivir, due to the skewed testing playing field, I guess we could say, that we looked at in For the Record 1132 and 1134, that is in fact basically a win for Gilead Sciences vis-a-vis SARS-CoV-2. Again, this statement from August of last year. A statement from Gilead said the company remains committed to studying remdesivir as a possible treatment for Ebola and other emerging viral diseases. And again, skipping down. At the time, it was thought that it might take multiple Ebola outbreaks before researchers had enough data. It was designed to be a rolling trial that could incorporate data from future outbreaks in other countries if needed. But the ongoing outbreak in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, now in its second year, has been so large there were enough patients enrolled to come up with answers. And noting again some of the history here of Gilead Sciences, one observer described it as the best, one fellow here, Andrew McDonald of Think Equity Partners in San Francisco, described remdesivir, "I don't know of any biotech company that is so politically well-connected." And among the various connections here, one of them is Donald Rumsfeld, the former Secretary of Defense, who, as we will see, made a tremendous amount of money through his holdings in Gilead Sciences. He had been the chairman of the board for Gilead for many years before leaving and going to work for George W. Bush's Pentagon, and he had been a director before becoming chairman of the board in 1997. Among the other key directors, former Secretary of State George Shultz, the wife of former California Governor Pete Wilson, as we have looked at in the past, one of the founding directors was a guy named C. Benno Schmidt, C period, B-E-N-N-O, last name S-C-H-M-I-D-T. He was one of the people who prevailed on former President Richard Nixon to launch the, quote, war on cancer, unquote, that was the cover for, among other things, the apparent development of AIDS under the National Cancer Institute's Special Viral Cancer Research Program that was conducted at Fort Detrick by a, quote, private contractor, unquote. And that was Litton Industries, a biotechnology subsidiary of Litton Industries. Now, Donald Rumsfeld made a lot of money as a result of his holdings in Gilead Sciences. He had been chairman of the board. And one of the interesting things here is that the drug that they developed, Gilead Sciences, Tamiflu, was developed to combat the H5N1 avian flu. This resulted in an exponential increase in earnings and in their stock price. One of the people who was a beneficiary of this was Donald Rumsfeld. He was the Secretary of Defense in 2001 when the anthrax attacks helped to precipitate a tenfold increase in the funding of biological warfare, quote, defense, unquote. And as we have seen before, the difference between, quote, offensive, unquote, and, quote, defensive, unquote, biological warfare research is essentially academic. If you are investigating, I should say, the way microorganisms infect people or plants or animals and produce disease, whether or not it's for, quote, offensive purposes or for, quote, defensive, unquote, purposes, it is essentially academic. Now, from CNN, from October 31st of 2005, this is by Nelson D. Schwartz. Rumsfeld's growing stake in Tamiflu. Now, note that as he made a whole lot of money here, one of the major investors in Gilead Sciences for Tamiflu was the federal government and the Pentagon. What's more, the federal government is emerging as one of the world's biggest customers for Tamiflu. In July, the Pentagon ordered $58 million worth of the treatment for U.S. troops around the world, and Congress is considering a multi-billion dollar purchase. And as far as the effect that that had on the stock and earnings for Gilead Sciences and the money that made for then Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, who again had been a director of Gilead Sciences for many years. He was chairman of the board from 1997 until he resigned in 2001 to become Secretary of Defense, with the Pentagon being a major purchaser of Tamiflu. From the Independent of March 12th of 2006, this is by Jeffrey, G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y, Lean, L-E-A-N, and Jonathan Owen, O-W-E-N. Donald Rumsfeld makes $5 million killing on bird flu drug. More than 60 countries have so far ordered large stocks of the antiviral medication, the only oral medicine believed to be effective against the deadly H5N1 strain of the disease, to try to protect their people. The UN estimates that a pandemic could kill 150 million people worldwide. P.S. It didn't. It killed a bunch of people, nowhere near that many. But note what happened to the firm's stock, with, again, the Pentagon and the federal government being major purchasers of Tamiflu. The firm made a loss in 2003, the year before concerns about bird flu started. Then, revenues from Tamiflu almost quadrupled to $44.6 million, helping to put the company well into the black. Sales almost quadrupled again to $161.6 million last year. During this time, the share price trebled. In other words, it rose three times. Mr. Rumsfeld sold some of his Gilead shares in 2004, reaping, according to the financial disclosure report he is required to make each year, capital gains of more than $5 million. The report showed that he still had up to $25 million worth of shares at the end of 2004, and at least one analyst believes his stake has grown well beyond that figure, as the share price has soared. One of the things that we noted in For the Record programs 1116 and 1117 is that the avian flu that Tamiflu was developed to combat, H5N1, was one of the major focal points of the gain-of-function experiments in which that virus was genetically manipulated to infect ferrets. And with that manipulation, it became communicable by upper respiratory activity. And that is one of the characteristics that we have seen with the SARS-CoV-2. And we speculated about the gain-of-function experiments possibly, and again I say possibly, having had some relevance to the development of SARS-CoV-2. Note again that the gain-of-function experiments were suspended in 2014 because they were deemed to be too risky. They were then resumed by the Trump administration in 2017. Now, as far as possible vectoring scenarios for SARS-CoV-2, I would note that in addition to the military world gains, and we're going to come back to that, and in addition to the Xinjiang-Ji cult, there was a workshop at the Wuhan Institute of Virology scheduled for early November of 2019, and there would have been a lot of possibilities for vectoring personnel to have gotten in there. From the official release, from the Wuhan Institute of Virology, Chinese Academy of Sciences, May 9, 2020, Internet Archive Capture, International Workshop on Biosafety, Lab Management, and Techniques, November 3rd through 9th, 2019, Wuhan, China. The workshop is designed for laboratory managers and directors research and laboratory staffs, mainly from developing countries who plan to carry out infectious disease research in biosafety facilities. The workshop will address key aspects of biosafety and provide practical training in high-level biosafety laboratories, or BSL. This workshop will invite a group of well-known scholars and experts from related fields at home and abroad to provide the theoretical and practical courses, unquote. The workshop is designed for laboratory managers. That would have basically opened up the possibility for a miscreant of one kind or more than one to have vectored Wuhan. Again, this is speculative. I wonder about the Shenzhen cult. I wonder about the laboratory itself, given that there was a joint Chinese and U.S. program. We're about to come back to that at that laboratory. And that not only were many of the laboratory personnel trained in the U.S., again, the possibility of a covert operative is one to keep in mind there, but also the program's funding from the U.S. was from the NIH and USAID, both of them institutions that have covered for CIA and the Pentagon. From ABC News by Connor Finnegan of May 1st of 2020, Trump administration pulls NIH grant for coronavirus research over ties to Wuhan lab at heart of conspiracy theories. The cancellation of the grant after more than a decade of work in this field seems to be tied to EcoHealth Alliance's partnership with the Wuhan Institute of Virology. EcoHealth Alliance has worked at that lab for over a decade, according to a source familiar with the grant, as has the U.S. Agency for International Development's PREDICT project. And, again, noting that the DARPA has investigated just those types of viruses, that from the last American Vagabond of January 30th of 2020, bats, gene editing, and bioweapons. Recent DARPA experiments raise concerns amid coronavirus outbreak. This by Whitney Webb, and there will be an excerpt of this in the written description for the record program number 1138. Now we're going to conclude with another possible vector, namely the Military World Games. We have spoken about that in For the Record programs 1118 and 1122, and we have come back to that in other broadcasts as well. From the American Prospect magazine of June 30th of 2020, Did the Military World Games Spread COVID-19 by Tom Squitieri, Squitieri. Note the following about the U.S. delegation. Contrary to the Pentagon's insistence, however, an investigation of COVID-19 cases in the military from official and public source materials shows that a strong correlation exists in COVID-19 cases reported at U.S. military facilities that are home bases to members that are home bases of members of the U.S. team that went to Wuhan. Before March 31st, when the Pentagon restricted the release of information about COVID-19 cases at installations for security reasons, infections occurred at a minimum of 63 military facilities where team members returned after the Wuhan Games. Additionally, the U.S. team used chartered flights to and from the Games via Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. Washington was one of the earliest states to show a spike in COVID-19. So it was the U.S. Team vectored, noting that their contingent involved 9 public affairs officers and 2 State Department personnel. Public affairs officer is a common cover for CIA personnel. So again, was the U.S. delegation at the Military World Games vectored? Did they then help to bring it back, as we speculated in For the Record 1122, to military bases? And was the outbreak in Washington linked to the Seattle-Tacoma airport? We do not know, but it is interesting to contemplate. This concludes For the Record program number 1138, BioPsyOp Apocalypse Now Part 10, Bad Medicine. This is being recorded on July 8th of 2020. I'm Dave Emery. Have fun.